Well, hi, friends. Welcome back to the podcast. Our team is with us today, and we've been chatting a lot about the subject in advance of even this recording right now. So we're going to take you back to the last podcast. And if you haven't tuned in, I would highly encourage you to do it because we're going to extend it. My interview with Jordan Rayner on a book that he wrote recently, but also on a message that God has given him for this time. And that message is the sacredness of secular work. And Jordan says there are four ways that your job matters for eternity, even when you're not sharing the gospel, which probably has a lot of people wondering, well, what does he exactly mean? So as you can see, we're all here, Colleen, Mike, Katie, and we're going to talk about this today, extending it conversation a little differently, because Jordan does a great job of providing a perspective that he is coming from, but it's not always everybody's understanding. And he spends a couple hundred pages here and in multiple places, and by taking us back to the Word to help kind of unpack what that all means. But as a group, we thought, well, okay, how does that kind of overlap the message of Embracing Brokenness Ministries and everything that we're about, what we're trying to bring to you and share with you? So I kind of think in some ways that Jordan was eavesdropping a little bit into some of our conversations, because where he starts in his book and in the conversation is talking about the first commission. And you say, well, we've all heard about the Great Commission. What exactly is he talking about when he's talking about the first commission? And he takes us back to Genesis 1, 2, 3. And he says, well, listen, this isn't just about something we heard about from Jesus before he left this world, but it starts back with creation to the time in which he comes back again. So we're going to explore that a little bit today, and I'm really glad you could join us, and would also encourage you, again, go back, listen to what Jordan has to say, even share it with people that you might want to bring this out to. So I thought the way we kick it off, Kyle, is to just, let's talk about that first commission. Let's talk about the fact that, you know, that God said originally in the garden, kind of the cultural mandate. We've used that word around here a lot. It's a word used throughout, I think, most of history. The idea of us being fruitful and multiplying, filling the earth, you know, subduing it and then ruling over it. This is pretty much what our role is.
Yes.
How does that take us, though, from today through eternity? What help kind of recap what's your thoughts on it?
Well, I think if we look at this visual, to see in Genesis 1:28 is clearly what we call the cultural mandate. And it's interesting, I think for a long time in Western Christianity, we have focused on the Great Commission. We've really been focused on, okay, Jesus came, we're sinners, we get saved by grace, we've got to go out and tell everybody else and make them Christians. It's an incomplete gospel,
right?
For several reasons. One is the restoration back into the Imago Dei, and usually that's a path of suffering to get there. So, you know, pick up your cross and follow Jesus. But the second real big piece is Satan, I think, has just really used blocking us to the original mandate, which we find in Genesis 1:28. In the beginning, we see who God is very clearly, this creator God who works and even shows us a context of what it looks like to work for 6 days, and then you have this period of rest. And we see in Adam, God has created the formation of all kinds of things. Like, I think about it as a lump of clay God brought to Adam and said, you're going to name the animals, and what you name them, they're going to become. And all of a sudden, Adam is now co-creating with God, you know, and he names dog. Thank goodness he did. They're incredible. And I think he specially named Golden Retriever. I don't know about all the other breeds, to be this lovely person. But so we see very clearly what God was intending of the cultural mandate, which was, I've created everything. All the raw materials are here. You're going to take them into a more complete place, and you're going to do it to glorify me. And so that mandate, we a lot of times focus and get really weirded out because of how we use some of these words. But if you look at this visual, you'll see we were created, first of all, internally for me, I don't have the consequences of the fall, which are really all relational. You know, I fell from God. I fell from others. I fell from creation. I think vocation is a part. I mean, work is a part of creation, right? And the huge piece, or the biggest, was the fall from God, but I fell from self. But when we totally know who our true self is, God created each of us with an attribute of his character to turn into work that was enjoyable. I don't think God sat around for the first 6 days of creation and went, that was awful, I had to work. How many of us, Monday morning, that comes up, right?
That's your point.
So, you know, so you have this context as he shows us what it's supposed to be. We see it in Adam, and then Satan takes any kind of truth and disturbs it. But if we were, if I was in perfect harmony with myself and you were in perfect harmony as man and wife, we would have been fully representing God in cultivating the earth. And what did that mean? I mean, I love Jordan, you know, talks about the Garden City, and Katie had brought it up too. It's an incredible visual. Now, it wouldn't have been a city in the Garden of Eden. Garden of Eden was going to expand across all the earth. And so cities and what we actually physically see today were coming. However, here's the difference in the cultural mandate. Everything we did was fully connected, fully abiding in God. And so we had perfect shalom, perfect peace, nothing missing, nothing broken, and we were creating out of that. And so we have this creative piece, which is kind of the ruler, but we also were rulers, right? Like, we were supposed to be representing God in the way God would rule. And if we represented God in the way he would rule, everybody would think about him, because that's how we would bring glory. Like, this is who God is. And, you know, so it was huge. And from that, I think what we can really see is after the fall, we were ruling over systems. I mean, economics, money would have all been, the only thing that glorifies God is human flourishing from his system. Love is expanding. And so we would have created systems. There would have been no racism, no confusion in anything. Every single person would flourish. Yeah. You know, greed wouldn't be there. Political systems, can you imagine this? Political systems would have been under the rule of shalom. And so we wouldn't have this social, all the social systems, and quite frankly, the religious systems, which we have really pretty much messed up pretty bad when we don't understand this concept. And so I love Jordan takes us a step further in kind of highlighting, you know, the point about the brokenness of creation. And honestly, if we think about that, it has really caused us to not like work and to think about the context of eternity, which really is where we should be living. It totally shadows that out, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. So the cue there was, because, you know, his subtitle, Four Ways Your Job Matters for Eternity. Mm-hmm. So we're like, oh, you mean to say that we're not just going to kind of be floating on clouds and playing harps, that there is something greater that we're doing today in our own vocations that matters far beyond the time that Jesus comes and gets us.
Yeah, I think the whole concept of a ticket to heaven is what most Western Christianity since the 17th century has been living under. And what that ticket to heaven says is, I got my ticket to heaven. I'm going to do everything I want, you know, on the earth. And then when I get to heaven, God's going to perfect me. But that is not what Christ died for. Christ died to say, as soon as you are saved, you are being modeled into his image, and eternity has started right now. Your eternal life. So we should be living in another kingdom. I mean, that whole mystery of kind of we're here, but not yet, is this mystery of this hidden kingdom we're living in, instead of this world system. And so there's a lot of work to do, but the new earth and the new heaven, which will be on the new earth, they're coming, and we need to be prepared as the bride of Christ, actually, to, you know, step in and do what we were called to in the garden. And so many people are not going to be ready for that, right? Because they haven't done the transformational pieces of this.
Okay. to hear from our other friends
yep.
on the other side of the table. We talk about the sacredness, right, of secular work. It's not the first thing I think of when I think of work as sacred. You know, there's especially, well, I can think back of some jobs I had I'd rather not have been doing. So, all right, Katie, we'll toss it your way. Like, what is your perspective when it comes to, because you've been in the workplace environment, right? You are now, I'll call stay-at-home mother. I get, that's probably the greatest job you've ever had. How did you land in this whole place?
I think something that we talk about at Embracing Brokenness is the idea that we take on different identities throughout our lifetime on earth. And for me, when I became a mom and left the professional world, which I took a lot of pride in what I did at the mission and different initiatives that Colleen and I did there, I loved it. And so when I had a baby, I said to Colleen, I'll be back in 8 weeks, 12 yeah, weeks, yeah. whatever the maternity leave was. And she just said, just wait, Katie Bug. Just wait. And sure enough, I was so, I mean, yeah, I wanted to go back to work, but even more than that, I did not want to leave my child with somebody else.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So I took on this different identity that really is an unseen, underappreciated identity. And I struggled with that. Like, I was doing something that was pretty shiny before, and now I'm doing something that feels very behind the scenes, very dull at times, questioning a lot of the significance of what I was doing. And I think through that, a lot of what I got out of the book is my identity goes beyond the vocation I'm in. It goes beyond what I'm doing from the day to day. And really, it's all to the glory of God. So whatever I'm doing it with love and understanding the significance behind it is advancing the Garden City, advancing the kingdom. So for me, trying to let go that my identity is not in my vocation. I am a mother, but that is not all I am even. And you know, society puts a lot of pressure on people to, you know, grab an identity and hold on to it. So trying to be able to navigate that as my life continues to change in different ways, different roles.
So that's a great point, because part of even our society, they values certain positions over other positions.
Yeah.
And look, there are plenty of mothers out here there that have no other choice, or they choose to go back to work. That's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. Okay. Yeah. So I think there's, or maybe a better way to look at it is we're there's an over obsession with utility over function. For example, human traffickers, right? Let's put it this way. Prosecuting human traffickers would be a really, like, the world would look at that and go, wow, that is a hugely important thing. And Jordan brings out an organization that he has someone that he's friends with that does that, prosecute human trafficking around the world. And it's a cause that probably on the top of the list when we look at where we are today. That's kind of how people think. Like, this has got to be stopped. But selling life insurance, not exactly the most glamorous of anything, or cardboard boxes, for example. But that's a living that some people are proud of and very pleased to be a part of. There are other times, coming to you now, there are other times when we find ourselves in positions where, like, really, this is sacred? This is the sacredness of secular work? How in the world does that come into play? You got some thoughts on that, I have a feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine that there are quite a few people who've not made a connection between work and sacredness.
Yeah.
And I think we could draw that from a lot of different places, is that it's not something that we were raised in.
Yeah.
It's not part of our religious culture.
Right.
There's always been this dichotomy between what is sacred, what is out of the world.
Yes.
And so, you know, I'm one who's never looked at my vocation, like, you know, like kind of what Katie said, like, my identity has never been tied to what I do, which may, as a man, not always line up. Like, we are always identified with what we do, so intrinsically.
Yeah.
But I've always had this disconnect between my identity and my vocation. So it's hard I bring myself to it. I don't necessarily see it as sacred in and of itself, and it's mm-hmm. has intrinsic sacred value. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you know, like I love the cultural mandate. I love mm-hmm. where we were supposed to be and where yeah. we started. Yeah.
Amen.
The partnership with God in the creation, and when you think about the tapestry and the mm-hmm. possibilities, the opportunity was
yeah.
unlimited.
Yeah.
You know, he said, let us make man in our image. Mm-hmm. And what is his image if it isn't creative, expressive? You know, like he's you know, like you said, like he's bringing the animals to Adam and saying, what are you going to call this? Mm-hmm. And I can just feel his delight in that.
Like, oh my goodness. Yeah.
The let's do this together. You know, yeah. all four of us, right? You know, the Trinity. And,
yeah.
So there is, you know, there's a sacredness in that if you can apply that to what you're doing on a day to day to say, hey, how do we do this together? That connection is has been difficult for me to get to at points yeah. because it's, you know, I've never given any thought.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm bringing my transformational journey to my vocation, right?
Amen.
And the sacredness up to this point in work for me has been in where work and God intersect. Mm-hmm. You know, I think God uses work to mold us and to bring areas, you know, to light, areas that need to be addressed or whatever. Like we grow a lot in how we
do.
You know, do the work of the day to day. But yeah, so back to your question. So yeah, I think that is it fair to say that there's a difference between impact and value? Mm-hmm. Because I may not, you know, I consider myself a lay minister in terms of the religious circle. Mm-hmm. I have no less value than the guy who planted 20 churches.
That's right.
You know, down yep. the street.
Right. Yep.
It's a different kind of impact, but
yep.
what stirs my heart also stirs God's heart.
Yeah.
You know, he's moved by bringing freedom to captives. Mm-hmm. He's moved by serving others, like he's moved by what we're moved by, like we're supposed to share that heart connection. So I don't know that it matters mm-hmm. necessarily, as long as you are wholeheartedly pursuing what he's put in your heart and that yeah. you're bringing him into the equation.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of times that we underestimate the gifts that God's given us. So when we step into a role, because it really shouldn't be our identity, but I can remember times in my life where, like you said, my work was everything.
Yeah.
Like this is who I am. Even as a Christian, this is who I am, which was an unhealed up version of me, even though I'm not healed. I'm in process. But there was a time when that's all that mattered. Whether yeah. I drove a big car or if I had a big house and it was an impression that I left, that must mean success. So yeah. that means impact. That means all those things. But no, it was a very self-centered approach to my career and to what I was doing. It was all about me. And I think there are times when every one of us struggles with that. Mm. So what ends up being more sacred about our work is a discovery of who God made us to be, who we are in him, and how that translates into our life. Because as Jordan points out in the book, you know, we may only be sharing the gospel 1% of the time. Mm-hmm. As in our vocation, because, well, first of all, why? Well, most businesses where you get a paycheck are not paying you to tell other people about Jesus. Okay, let's just be honest about that. The cool thing about what you do, Katie, is when you get moms together and you can share one another's journey with each other and you can support one another, now all of a sudden it's no problem. Yeah. But yeah, and so that is your heart. You know, we don't always get to do those things in our secular jobs. But it's also pretty important, you know, as a janitor, to go in and do the best you can when you're cleaning up the restrooms for everybody else. That is a reflection of who we are. It is a reflection of how we glorify God in our gift. Mm-hmm. I would say that I am a cleanup person.
Thank goodness.
But it's not. I
love that about you.
But I have to. She's not, but it's not something I enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. It's just was beat into me as a kid. No, not quite. Mom, it's okay. But it was that's sort of how I saw it. Not in my gifting.
Yeah. Yes. One of the things that really spoke to me in Jordan's book was he pointed out that Jesus was a carpenter for most of his life.
Yeah.
Yet we focus a lot of what we read about him. The Bible talks about his ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So the last few years of his life, but up until 30 some years old, he was learning carpentry, doing carpentry. He was out there sanding wood, maybe, you know? Mm-hmm. So I thought about that. What does that look like in my life? Well, changing a poopy diaper. Like I've changed so many in the last 4.5 years.
Yeah. Yes.
And I went through some dark spaces thinking about those little mundane tasks that I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And was my husband changing as many poopy diapers as I was? Was he getting up as many times at night as I was?
Yeah.
You know, I felt this weights and measures perspective consuming me, and I was not happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggled to see the value in me doing those things. And in the middle of the night, no one, I've said this before, no one sees a mom up there with her child trying to get him or her to go back to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jordan's book, where he talks about what did it look like for Jesus every day to carry out that job, and how did he do it? Did he know what his ministry would look like, or what the ultimate sacrifice would look like that he would make? No, but how did his job also prepare him in whatever way to get to that point in his ministry where now we're still talking about him thousands of years later?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, so I look at changing those poopy diapers now as, you know, I'm caring for that child who's going to grow up and tell people about Jesus one day, work in a position with integrity and reflect the image of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to keep that perspective, even though it's hard some days.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Yeah. And every one of us brings a different point of view to that.
Mm-hmm.
And when we initially talked about doing this podcast, where I think a lot of our audience, I'm sure, there's skepticism about, well, so what? Because when we get to heaven, Jordan talks in the books about half-truths about heaven. One of them is, you know, that we'll all be sitting on a cloud playing our harps and enjoying worship services all day. Although that to me would be brutal, like to sit and worship for eternity. Okay, so when I think about it, I'm like, there has to be more, right, to it. And if anyone, you know, does a survey of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, you'll see. And he does a great job at pulling all the scriptures in to back this up. But intuitively, we don't spend a lot of time thinking about what we're going to be doing in eternity.
Yeah.
But our work does matter for eternity. And he does a great job of pointing that out. And I think that's why we're in this conversation, because a lot of us out there, and I was one of them, we were all, like, does it really matter what I do now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think probably not as much as we think it does, exactly what that is, but what we are doing, it does matter in the sense of we're doing it for him. So it is there is sacredness in our secular work, no matter what it is. And there are times when we didn't do things we actually like to do, but there are other times when, like, I'm in my sweet spot. Well, our sweet spot likely will be the place in eternity where we do some of those things.
And I think of, I like to think of this in terms of kingdom principles, right? So when Jesus came and said, the kingdom of God is at hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think of myself in terms of kingdom, and, you know, where I go, so goes the kingdom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, in principle, it's fun to think about what does that look like on the other side of, you know, when we're either in the renewed earth or in heaven, however it comes to pass. Will it be like, you know, the gifts that we have and the ways that we are wired, are we still going to get the chance to partner with him again like we were going to back in Eden and redo the next one, like the way it should have been, like it's kind of, you know, part of what gave me pause though, initially when I started looking at this was, well, what about all the people who are unfulfilled and unhappy and their vocation has been underwhelming, or they're in a position they never cared for, or they never found their thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the, you know, what is, are the, what is the joy on the set before them? You know,
yeah,
like,
right.
What if they just, you know, God forbid something happened. They never got, there was a lot of people who don't work at all. Mm-hmm. You know, they're with, for a disability or for some other, like something that was robbed or taken from them here. What does that look like?
Well, I think what's interesting is what we define as work.
Yeah.
You know, I think two things. I mean, sin and materialism has totally affected vocation, which is what God has called us to do, because the way the world system assigns money to things. I mean, if your heart was, when, you know, people aren't feeling well, to take them, make soup in your house and take it to them, you're not getting paid for that. But that may be the work of heaven. Like, so to me, paying attention to our deepest desires and understanding that God planted those deepest desires in us. It's not like we just concocted, I love to garden and make, you know, flowers or whatever. God put that in me. So he knew the purpose he created me for. And in my true self, I knew that. And all these shades, you know, to get my own needs met in this world have convoluted that. But like, if I physically am disabled, which is not going to be a context of heaven, there's probably something I'm doing. Like, I think about some of my guests from working in the mission environment. Many were on disability. And because of this concept of work, it being essential to who we are as Christians, it's not necessarily about paid work. It was like, guys, then we need to talk about what God has put into you and how you're going to volunteer. Because if you are not serving others in the service to the kingdom, you really are going to fall apart. And I think we really have to wrestle with what we call work. Mm-hmm. I think something else that just struck me that is just crazy to me, and probably a little provocative, but, you know, I always am, is,
guys,
let's really think about something that it just struck me. We are created for a cultural mandate. That was what God created us for. I mean, we find it right there, the very first chapter of the Bible. We never would have been trying to pass tracts and get people saved had we not fallen, right? So that is not a context of what we're going to be doing.
That's for sure.
So what's interesting is you start to think about what we are going to be doing. It is going to be paying attention to God and what does his reign look like? And we're imitating his reign connected to his heart so that everything is under his reign. And so, like, Jordan, one of the things that Jordan said that was just interesting to me was when he talked about feeling like he had to leave, you know, the entrepreneurial work he was doing, because wouldn't it be better if he went and became a pastor, right? Because we have this illusion that when we do godly things, and it actually is a really intentional split from the Enlightenment, that there's a huge split between the secular and the sacred. So we think about that all the time, and I think that's really impacted this concept. But we were not created to run around and physically try to talk people into how they could get to heaven. We were to stand up, and we still see it all through New Testament scriptures, to stand up in his image, to be transformed. And people are going to see that and say, I want that, right? And this whole thing about going, and the second part, we are supposed to spread his image. And so that does talk about the people who don't know his image. So there's certainly a real part. But isn't it amazing that people are attracted to that by seeing people who are living it out?
Yeah.
Well, versus right now, the church, most people are looking at it and saying, I don't want anything to do with that church because we're not living it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so what is more important? And I think Jordan's point actually goes back to this, which I never thought about. He is talking about living out the cultural mandate, which is actually a way to get to what we were commissioned to do from Jesus.
Yes.
Jesus's sacrifice was not about a ticket to heaven. Jesus' sacrifice was a return to the Father, which that return is complete abiding in the Father, which translates into everything we do. It was a return to the cultural mandate.
Yes.
And so I think, like, that piece just came to me as we were all talking, like, we need to return to the cultural mandate, and we will meet the Great Commission as we do it.
Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, like, the, you know, we're called to be lights and a beacon.
Yep.
And when, mm-hmm. you know, when we go back to, like, the kingdom principle,
mm-hmm.
equating the kingdom principles with the first commission or the cultural mandate.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So mm-hmm. when we're living as him in the kingdom,
mm-hmm.
and the kingdom is deployed, what does that look like? Well, it looks like wholeness. It looks like health. It looks like
yes.
prosperity. It looks like all the resources of heaven coming to the fore. That's not going to not be attractive.
Right.
You know, that's, then, you know, there is then, you know, how do you answer for the hope that you have? How do you answer for all the stuff that you have? Well, let me tell you about where this all comes from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think the two go hand in hand in the age that we're in, but I love that.
Because he also talks about the abridged versus the unabridged gospel.
Yeah.
The abridged being, and this is, by the way, it's not a negative, it's just perception. Like the Great Commission, by the way, that word Great Commission, you're not going to find that in the Bible. Okay, that was more in the last couple hundred years. That's a way of describing what Jesus kind of pointed us to do, right? Spread the word, spread the gospel, mm-hmm. To every part of the earth. Unabridged version is all of that, Genesis to Revelation. And so I think what he said, this is kind of interesting, so I want to make sure I get this right, so I'm going to read it. He said, make disciples, because part of it is right in a post-Christian era. He said, making disciples in a post-Christian era, or the world the way it is today, how do we do that without leaving tracks in the break room? Okay, right?
Yeah.
Because you could, in your workplace, you could do that, maybe get away with it as long as it's anonymous. Of course, they might have cameras everywhere. You could get in trouble. But really, how do we do it in a post-Christian era? We live as post-Christian. Like this, we're acting like, you know, this is a Christian country. And look, when you define it in the truest sense, and we've talked about this before, the biblical worldview is a single-digit percentage of the people that are living in America today. And that's a complete view. If you want to go back to another podcast, we can point you in the right direction to see how to define that. But that being the case, you know, we have all kinds of definitions for Christians. Like people define themselves that way and aren't even, you couldn't even imagine that that's true. So when you're in any environment, what's the best way? Like, how do we do that? How do we do it in a post-Christian era? That's a great question. Like, other than leaving tracks on the table.
Right.
I'll tell you, I just find it fascinating that we've lost so much of Gen Z, if you look at the data, and why is the reason we've lost them to Christianity when they were raised in Christian homes? The number one reason that they say they have walked away was hypocrisy.
Mm.
They did not see their parents and other Christians walking out what the Bible says, right?
Yeah.
And I think, I'm even, the whole track thing came to me. This probably won't surprise anybody that knows me, but when I was a waitress, that's how I got through college. We used to have this conference, different conferences would come in, and you know they were in town for a week and you'd wait on them. And this one super loud Christian group were notorious for coming in and like running you like crazy and not leaving a tip. But what was even better was the time that I had these three guys that ran my rear end off, and they left a track and no tip.
As a tip. A track is a tip.
The track was the tip because, you know, some people are so kingdom-minded that, well, it's much money is nothing. We should get you saved. Now, I did chase them out when they were trying to get in their car. But I had to say something, and it wasn't about me not getting the money. In fact, they were grabbing for their wallets to give me some. I'm like, you keep your money. This is much more important. I said, don't you ever dishonor my God in this way again. Mm-hmm. I said, you are going to act like this when I describe their behavior. And you're going to leave me a track. I said, why don't you just like wear the track on your head? It was like when I put a fish on my car, I was a much better driver because I was repping God. But like, think about what you're modeling here.
Yeah.
So us not doing the transformational journey at all, or really learning to love or control our attitudes, or you name it, and then going with a track or telling people about Jesus when they've just been watching you with a workplace act like an absolute idiot. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're on. So you probably answered the question, because it is about attitude, treatment, doing our best at what we've been called to do. Not leaving tracks. That's pretty presumptuous, not knowing exactly where you stood in your faith, right?
Yeah.
And also probably some self-serving, leave me off the hook without putting out money.
Well, and all the waitresses, knowing this group would be in town, everybody tried to take the week off. And we all knew they were the loudest Christian group. And even those of us that were Christians were like, they're horrible to people. They treat you terrible.
Wow.
And then they leave tracks, and, you know, like, it was known. So can you imagine the witness of that to non-believers? It just locked them more into,
and so that,
Christians are idiots.
Right. And it's, know? And it's may not be about tracks. It's about how we show up for work. 100%. Yeah. And I think that's really important. Well, this has been a great conversation. We wish we could go on and on and on, but I will give everyone around the table one more shot. If you have anything you'd like to add to the conversation, we probably...
I've used all my shots.
You've used all your
words? I've used all my words. I don't need to use any more words.
All right. I probably use most of mine too. What? Any words of wisdom you'd like to leave us with on this subject?
I think what I took away from it was having... a heart posture and actions that reflect valuing God, valuing others, valuing his creation. Yeah. So in everything we do, having that perspective of how in this situation am I valuing God? And it makes it seem like so much bigger of a deal.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden it is that kingdom mindset, because he cares about the little babies that, you know, need their diapers changed.
Yeah.
He cares about the animals and the plants and the flowers. And so if we have that perspective in everything we do, he cares about your boss that you might not like.
Mm-hmm.
He cares about your coworkers. And so, yeah, I think that that was the biggest thing for me to take away, that it's about valuing who and what is in front of you.
Yeah.
That's great. I love that synopsis. It's good.
Takeaways are important. We're going to ask everybody to give us their takeaway in the comments section.
Katie might not like her boss, but I love mine. And Casey's watching.
I love it.
That's perfect. That is perfect.
Sorry, I had to. I love what you said, and I think it's that is how, you know, in the post-Christian world, how, I mean, let's be honest, most of the ministry, most of the evangelism that takes place, that ever happens, it happens outside the four walls of the church.
That's right.
By people who aren't wearing the collar.
Yeah.
That's right.
And we do that by, you know, where our feet tread, we carry him, and how we show up matters. And, you know, how are we going to respond to situations? How do we handle adversity in those moments with, you know, shoulder to shoulder with all the people we work with?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where it all happens.
That is a great way to wrap. So for any of you out there that would love to share your thoughts, as I just mentioned earlier, very quickly, let us know in the comments section. And we're going to put in the show notes some links. You'll be able to get Jordan's book. It's on Amazon, but we'll give you the links to that, his website, because it's a really good subject for you all to maybe tackle yourself internally, ask yourself some of the questions he does. He provides a ton of resources that are free beyond the book. And I particularly love the fact that he gives 8 propositions as to why our work does have intrinsic value and does matter for eternity, which we ran out of time to be able to get into all that. And if you go last week, you'll get a little bit of that. But just share your thoughts with us, share them with each other, share this podcast with others, pointing back. But listen, thanks, guys. Thanks for just jumping in. I think it's a hugely important subject. We don't often think about how important, how sacred our secular work is, and how that translates into eternity. Now you have some things to think about.
Yes,
so,
for sure.
Blessings to everybody. We'll see you back next time.
This was another episode of the Embracing Brokenness podcast. For more information on Embracing Brokenness Ministries, or to subscribe to our blog, podcast, YouTube channel, or engage with us on social media, please visit our website at embracingbrokenness.org. Thanks for joining us.